Hello and welcome to the Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, as I'm now known, John Smith. People loved that. I was so surprised. I thought it was a shit joke. But anyway, John Smith is back. I'm joined by a very OG panel. They've put in a lot of hard podcasts over the years, so fair play to them. A lot of minutes racked up. Firstly, it's Christopher Sermani. I was going to come up with something stupid, but it's Chris Sermani. He's here. He's always here.
Evening, Louis. How are you?
I'm all right. I've pulled myself out of a pint. See, with a perfect draft, I find it really difficult, man. Every night I'm coming home from work and pulling myself a pint because it's there. But that's maybe for another podcast, but we'll get there. I'm also joined by Mr. XG himself. I was listening to you on the way to work. I was also listening to you on the toilet at one point today, Christian, which was a weird kind of thing. Because usually that's a very private, intimate moment, but there you were. It's Christian Wolfe.
I was happy to be there in your ear. So
yep. It was like you were sitting on my knee. It was lovely.
Hey, I don't hate this. It's not the worst opening we've had. Oh, you take a point, mate.
I don't know. It's close. I thought you were going to keep talking for like 3 or 4 minutes. To be honest,
when you took that drink, see that wee moment of silence there. It spoke volumes. That's all I'm saying.
It was perfect. We're also joined by a man in the dark room. It's Alan Edgar. How are you, Alan?
I'm good, thanks, mate. I was just about to disconnect for this call there with that Christian on the toilet chat. I read it as you were listening to Christian on the toilet as opposed to the other way, but there we are. We can maybe discuss after.
I think that was the way.
Yeah. People would then be thinking, do you really go to the toilet with your headphones on, listen to podcasts? But again, this is chat for another time. We are, of course, here to talk about Celtic. We actually have some games to talk about. Last week, we were coming off the international break. Transfer window had closed. We'd had that defeat in the derby and things like that, and we were kind of looking ahead, trying to be positive. We didn't expect there to be big news off the pitch, but obviously Don McKay has departed. There's been a biscuit tin episode went up today, which was great. It was a great lesson. I'm almost finished it. Discussing it, discussing the kind of ramifications of that and where the guys think we'll probably go from here. So if you've not subscribed to the cynic.co, then definitely get on there and have a listen. Definitely more informed than what we will be tonight. But we will get there and talk about it because it's a massive bit of news coming out of the club. But we're going to start with the football, as usual. Celtic 3, Ross County 0. Sermani, thoughts on the performance? It was a bit of a game of two halves, if you pardon the shit analogy.
Yeah, it was fine overall. I mean, I don't think we played very well. Let's get that out of the way. Performance-wise, we were off it. I think we're miles off where we've been in other games this season. In saying that, we had enough chances to rack up another 6-0 win like we had done before. So I'm fairly comfortable with it. I think I was listening to, was it the reaction with, who was on the reaction? Remind me. It was Alan. Look at him. Alan and Lorenzo, wasn't it?
And it was hosted by Graham McKay.
Thank you. Lorenzo said he was never in doubt. He didn't feel as if we weren't going to score at any point. I wouldn't quite go that far. Around 60
like Lorenzo with a cigar and slippers on.
Around 60 minutes I was getting a wee bit tetchy, but you know, there's no way that we didn't deserve to win, but it wasn't our best performance, but there's mitigation around that. Number of our players away on international duty, and some people coming in and making their debut. So overall it was fine. It was a healthy win in the end, and we move on.
Alan, I don't know if it was yourself that said this on the reaction, but you can absolutely take it and say it was you anyway. But it kind of did feel like a kind of December game at home that, you know, we just got through and got the points and that was it.
Yeah, I think that is kind of right. I think at the moment, because it's a new coaching team and a whole new team of players, we do want every game to be kind of wowed you know, every single time, especially when we're really lucky with the first two league games at Celtic Park, the 2-6-0s, and I think it would be nice if we could do that every game at Celtic Park. But I think at the moment we're trying to work out how good the team is, what the level is, and maybe just... I did think it was a really good performance. I don't think in that match in isolation, I think it was well off it. And if we put in that level of performance, I think, you know, on Thursday night, it will be a really, really different, you know, fixture for us. But that's okay. You know, I think you win the game, as you say, you're going to have games like that. That's absolutely fine. It's just a case of trying to improve week on week. And there was a lot of players out, some guys coming in that... Personally, I would just like to see when guys do come in and they get their chance, I'd like to see them maybe grab it a bit more. And I don't think, you know, a lot of players, you know, did that, but we'll maybe kind of touch on some of the performances.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of players that came in. So we had Joe Hart in goals, with Juranovic starting his favoured position at right back. Carter Vickers came in at centre half in place of Stephen Welsh. Maybe a wee bit of a contentious one, that, considering I think a lot of people would have, you know, I think Welsh has done well, so that was maybe a wee bit of a surprise. Starfelt next to him, Greg Taylor at left back, Roderick McGregor, Turnbull as the midfield three, and then Abada Ayeti up front, and Jota starting the game on the left side. Christian, can you, I know I'm hitting you early with this, but is there any stats, any XG nonsense that you want to tell us about, give us an overview of how the game went?
Lou, I'm well aware of my role. You know, I know why I have to, what I have to bring to the party, and I got some stats for you. I think overall, my views on the game is very much like Sermani's. I think there was 60 minutes there where it was a little bit in the balance, even at 1-0 to Celtic. And then Celtic get in XG just over 2, which, as you said, it's quite a bit less than what we've seen in the home game so far in terms of your quality of chances. But again, it's fine in terms of a home game. What I thought interesting stats-wise was that Celtic had 881 passes. Might not tell you much, but that is the most this season. And the second most passes this season was against Dundee at home, which I think we all agree was maybe one of the highlights of the season. But there's a couple of differences there you can see in the stats, and I think kind of bears out for what you actually, when watching the game and your impression. Celtic lost possession 70 times against County. They only lost it 45 times against Dundee. We have a stat we do after each game. We put what we call a match center on the Cynical Co for subscribers. Get all these kind of stats. But one that kind of popped out to me was that Celtic got into Dundee's half in control of the ball 60 times in that game. Against County, they get into the half 80 times. But the amount of times they get from the opposition's half into the opposition's penalty box, a lot less, you know, 15 percentage points if you want to be accurate. But I think what all those kind of stats tell you was that this is a game where Celtic passed the ball a lot. They lost the ball a lot more, but they got into Ross County's half, but they weren't as effective to get into the final third. Definitely not as effective to get into the penalty box as so many times. And I think there is, we're probably coming in a circle back to the team selection, you know, the front three especially maybe, but also, you know, some of the issues, not maybe not issues, but some of the things that are reoccurring with the midfield three and the fullbacks as well.
Yeah, I mean, is there anywhere, I don't know if there was a podcast released recently on the cynic.co that you could maybe explain what the hell XG is? I mean, was that a thing?
I'll tell you what, on Sunday, there was a podcast called Lost in the Half Space out with myself being the stat nerd, Stephen Russell being the tactics nerd, and the excellent Roof Boyle being the host. And essentially, Roof asks all the questions you're afraid to ask about stats and tactics, and we have a talk about what they mean, but also why we use stats and tactics. So yeah, hopefully it's been quite well received. So, you know, it's just another podcast you can delight in if you become a subscriber. But yeah, absolutely. Of course, a few weeks before, days before that, we had Beyond the Scoreboard, which is our stats and tactics podcast. So if you're really interested in that nerdy stuff, you know, you should subscribe, because there's a lot of nerds there.
So Manny, did you listen to Lost in the Half Space? I did. Ruth hosted it. Remember Ruth, who was one of our one of our team for the away reactions last season.
She's moved on to bigger and better things. I think it's time we accept that, isn't it?
I must admit, I thought I was funny as fuck last year because she always laughed, right? And I thought, she is
really polite.
I'm coming out with hits polite. Here, right? And then I realised, listening to Lost in the Half Space, when Christian was coming out with some awful dad jokes and she was pissing herself laughing, that she just fucking laughs at everything. So thanks, Ruth. I wasn't funny last year. You were just trying to make me feel better. So if she's listening...
Or we're both really funny, we. It could be.
I really doubt it, but you never know. Juranovic... Somani, one of my biggest hits. Where's my right back? We seem to have found him. He didn't look that great at times at the weekend. It's his first game at right back, though. What did you think when you saw him? Do you think he obviously will go on and be the right back that we believe he will be?
Well, I mean, we don't know that, but the fact is, I think he played three times for Croatia. He certainly played twice that I've seen. So if he's coming off of three games for Croatia, you're thinking, okay, right, give the guy a bit of a break. We've already seen how composed he looked for a spell at Ibrox at left back. So, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. Much like Alan said, you know, we were poor and he was particularly poor, I thought. But I didn't come away from that thinking he's not going to go on or be a player for us. I just thought that was a particularly poor performance. But there's perhaps reasons for that. But he looks careless in possession. His passing looked a bit awry. And to be honest, when he came in and you started, he's one of the players you were looking at and you wanted to be impressed. So it's that whole thing. You want us to go and do this every time we're at Celtic Park now, given we've seen what we can do. And you want to see new players come in and hit the ground running. But the fact that he didn't, it doesn't really bother me too much. But I was a wee bit surprised that he was so poor on the day.
I think at times he was lost in the half space. He spent a hell of a lot of time coming inside and there was times where, he maybe just didn't manage to affect things the way you would hope. But, you know, Alan, I know you've spoke about it in podcasts, especially when you and Christian done your podcasts of old and looking at the tactics involved and things like that. The fullbacks, as we know, the fullbacks are so important in football these days. I think the fullbacks is obviously... Both sides were a big, big concern earlier on in the, you know, certainly earlier on in the transfer window. Greg Taylor got injured. You know, we've seen him get injured and then he's had a reoccurrence of that shoulder injury. The weekend had to go off and Montgomery comes in. We've got Liam Scales, who I think obviously will probably be playing left back, but we're yet to see that. If we're going to go, well, I suppose I'll put it to you, would you play Montgomery now ahead of Greg Taylor because there seems to be a doubt there'll be injury, and how comfortable or positive would you be about Juranovic and Montgomery playing as fullbacks for the next run of games before the next international break?
I've been really impressed by Adam Montgomery. I really think, you know, we talk about players not taking their opportunities, but I think Adam Montgomery has taken most of the opportunities he's been given. Sometimes it's 10, 15 minutes at the end of games. You know, he obviously broke in last year under difficult circumstances. But I've always been impressed by him. I think his use of the ball is good. I think the energy that he brings is exactly what you want from a young player. He makes mistakes, of course he does. But I think the left back spot is up for grabs. I think 100%. If I was... you know, Adam Montgomery or any other functional left back at the club, we don't seem to have any others though, which is a pity. I would absolutely be thinking that spot's up for grabs. I think it's one of maybe two positions, maybe three at the club at the moment where you think I've got a proper chance of getting in there. And that's not to be, it's not disrespectful to Greg Taylor. Greg Taylor himself is still a very young player. I think we maybe sometimes forget he is still a young professional, but he's played a lot more games. But I don't think he's seized, he's kind of cemented that spot. And sometimes this is what happens with young players, you know, it takes an injury, a knock. And Greg Taylor, you know, it was a shoulder in the game before. He played through it, missed an international break, and then he seems to have kind of done it again. So we're playing two games a week for the next, you know, until the next international break. So there's got to be game time in there. So I'm excited. I think Adam Montgomery... he's a young player, he's going to make mistakes, but I don't think it's not the same as, say, losing Kyogo, you know, at this point in time. And I think he's just got to look at it as a great opportunity. And I hope he does well. We all want to see young guys come through. And I think, I'm assuming everybody else feels a similar vein. I think he's looked really good, you know, the game time that he has been given so far.
I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I feel as if the support aren't hyping him up as much as maybe we've done in the past. Like, obviously, the likes of Tierney got the hype and got everybody talking about him very quickly because he came in that European game, but it was also the way he played, the tenacity and the aggression in his play and all that. So maybe stylistically, that's the thing that kind of grabbed their attention. Montgomery's maybe not quite like that, but he seems very confident on the ball. He seems very comfortable on the ball in a way that Greg Taylor just doesn't. And I know there's big Greg Taylor fans on the Cynic and the support, and I get that. And I don't disagree that he's probably very diligent, and if you were to really study him, you'd see that he's playing the role very well. But I think Montgomery just looks a lot more dynamic and interesting, and you look at him and you think he could probably take it up a level. Is that, Christian, do you agree with that? Is that fair?
I think it is. As you say, I think Greg Taylor is very steady in terms of he knows his role, he knows what to execute, and I think he kind of gets what Ange is talking to do. And I think, you know, he's an experienced player, so I think he's got a big role in the season. But the thing with Montgomery, you saw it on Saturday, you know, the first thing he does, he takes on a man, he goes on a run into the final third. I mean, really late on, he's pressured by the Ross County right winger. He's got nobody to cover behind him. He's the last man. He's on the ball, but he just goes past him. He just runs up and gives it to Turnbull on the edge of the penalty box. And as you say, Lou, he loves to dribble. You know, if you look at the stats this season, it's only Tom Rogic, of course, that has attempted more dribbles and successfully made more dribbles than Montgomery for players that, you know, got more than a couple of games. So I think that's a really good point, Louis, in terms of he's kind of got all the attributes to be excited about, but he hasn't really kind of taken off yet. Because I think,
is maybe he more suited to Ange's style of play, Christian, than what Greg Taylor would be?
I think in Ange's play, his Ange's system is very much that a system. So Ange doesn't rely that much on individual brilliance. So I think that's where kind of Greg Taylor comes in. But I think Adam Montgomery has qualities that Greg Taylor doesn't have. Dribbling is one of them. Greg Taylor doesn't really dribble. He runs a lot. He's got great endurance. He knows he's got usually a good delivery, but he's not somebody who really takes on people or so on. So the different kind of players. And if you compare him to, you know, Scales, I can't say anything about Scales because I haven't seen him.
Scales is going to be great. He's going to be great.
But Adam Montgomery is 19-year-old. We've seen him do well in Europa League qualifications. So I'd be surprised if a 23-year-old in Liam Scales, who's partly a left centre-back, partly a left wing-back, only really played in the Irish League, I'd be very surprised to see if a better fit, a better prospect than Adam Montgomery. So yeah, I agree with Alan. I think it's very much Montgomery has a chance at that left-back position. It's Taylor that's his main competition.
I think Montgomery, you touched on it, Louis, and you were talking about when Tierney broke through. You better put yourself on mute, mate. That's right, because you're crunching your Pringles there. Talking about the tenacity of Tierney when he came through, I think I can see that in Montgomery as well. Montgomery looks as if he can be quite dogged, workmanlike as well. You know, he's not just somebody who takes the ball and meanders forward. I think perhaps the reason he's not been lauded or anointed as the new left-sided player for us by the fans is we haven't really seen him do anything in a defensive manner. Now, I thought he did really well against Alkmaar away, given you could tell maybe his positioning wasn't 100%, but that's because he's not really a left-back and we threw him in at left-back. But you know, I thought he did really well there in terms of things that he won in the air. But we've not seen him throwing himself into challenges the way that Tierney did. Tierney was really good going forward for us when he first came through, but he also looked like a really tenacious defender. We've not seen that with Montgomery, which is maybe why he's maybe not been put in that pedestal. But I agree with both Christian and Alan and yourself. I think he's got a huge future with us.
I think just as we're just taking a come in on, I think a couple of things. I think Samani's right. The workmanlike is one. I think he's very aggressive. I think he looks more a more physical player. And he is young, but and he appears slight, but he looks like he likes the physical element of the game. I think it was a chance that Callaghan had for County at the weekend. And this is one thing, mistakes 1v1 as a fullback, you probably need to cut out. You know, we talked about Juranovic at the start, but Ross Callaghan is a toe away from putting County ahead. And it all comes from Greg Taylor getting beat 1v1 from a pretty much a standing start. And I've seen it quite a few times with Greg Taylor. We all like to think that he's a very safe pair of hands and that defensively he's good, but he's limited going forward. For me, he gets beat a hell of a lot, 1v1. You know, balls getting into the box. You know, this is against Ross County at home. This isn't, you know, the big European games. So I think, as I say, I think the position's up for grabs. And I think part of the reason why maybe Montgomery's not getting the hype is, A, obviously it's been very limited appearances. But I think we're probably all sitting here just now still, we're trying to work out, is he only playing at left back because we don't have another option there? Or is he a left winger? I think it's that. I still don't know if actually he's a left winger or he's a left back. But see when you're a young guy getting your chances, see if the manager asks you to go in the park. You just go on, do it, and hope you do the best. And as I say, I would like to see more of him and at that left back slot. So you know, he might get his big chance on Thursday night.
Just while you're saying the 1v1 situations, Juranovic got absolutely ghosted by that Charles Cook at one point, and Jesus Christ. Like, as a Ross County player, and obviously the guys get pace, but my God, he left him for fucking dead.
It was quite funny because it was almost too quick for him because he thought about grabbing the shirt, and I think when he decided, right, I'm going to do that and foul him, he was gone. I mean, he got absolutely rinsed.
On the weekly, we don't really tend to go like kind of minute by minute through the games because obviously we've had the reaction podcast that came out after the game. So we're really just picking a few kind of talking points. One of them, you know, the guy who got the first goal and made his debut was, and don't get me wrong, deflection and all that for the goal. But Carter Vickers started, came in last hour of the transfer window. I think we all really wanted a centre-half brought in, and I think we'd been linked with him previously in the window, and it didn't seem to happen. Christian, how impressed were you? Personally, to kind of start it off, I was really impressed. I didn't have high hopes for him, and I think that was my problem. He exceeded expectations very quickly because he seemed competent, and he didn't look like he was feared of the ball, like Starfelt can look sometimes. He just looks so uncomfortable. But how impressed were you with his debut?
I think it was a good first impression. He looks strong in duels. He's not tall, but he is really strong. And he, as you said, I think he's quite calm most of the time, even just, you know, if he has to go into duels, if he's on the ball. And with time on the ball, he was able to pick a couple of nice passes. You know, there's one to Abada in the first half. There's a couple of instances where he's a little bit imprecise when pressured on the ball. He has quite a dangerous one passing out from his own penalty box. He has quite a spectacular bicycle kick attempt at some point as well. He's decent pace, but he's not rapid. So again, you know, I think overall you're still looking at having centre-back who doesn't have the greatest of pace, but they are probably asked to play quite high up on the pitch with a lot of space behind them. What I was really, you know, so good first impression, but what I found really interesting with Cameron Carter-Vickers coming in and Starfelt keeping his place, you know, Ange doesn't seem like a manager who looks at reputation or price tag. So I think for me, we'll see what happens on Thursday, obviously. But if, you know, CCV and Starfelt is still the centre-back pairing on Thursday, I think that's a really clear message. You know, Stephen Welsh is out now. And Ange Postecoglou don't think Stephen Welsh is a starter. And Starfelt is, and
the narrative is harsh. Is that harsh?
Well, I think the narrative so far has been that this season Starfelt has been shaky and Welsh have been impressive, and I think that is exactly that. In a little sense, there is a bit of a narrative because Stephen Welsh has had dodgy moments in those games as well. Maybe not as many as Starfelt, but I think the overall being closer in performance than maybe the impression you've got. But it's maybe a little bit surprised, but because I thought that was a very clear message from Postecoglou.
Manny, would you keep him in the team?
See, when it comes to the centre halves, I think Christian's right. Starfield's made mistakes, so is Welsh. Like, you just need to look at the away game against AZ. They both had won a piece that night. Vickers, for me, you know, I thought it was a good debut. I'm not reaching for the stars and thinking this guy's going to be your first choice centre half going forward. I think he looked slack at times. That overhead kick was right in front of me, and I'll be honest, I did my "he's not going to make it with us" immediate jerk, you know, reaction to it sort of thing. But in all seriousness, none of the three of them, I don't even think there's one of them that I think's nailed on for us. And that's, I think that it's very difficult to say about Cameron Carter-Vickers because he's just come in. But I don't think there's a huge amount between them, and I think that's a problem. Welsh, for me, is, you know, he's been getting the plaudits, but I don't think Welsh is particularly great at much, but he's not as he particularly bad at much. I just think he's steady, you know. Starfelt, you know, he's made some errors, but I don't think he's as bad as some people are saying. They all just scream to me, all right and decent, and that might not last for the season, and that might not be something we can sustain. But what I will say about Vickers, and again, first game, so it's not fair to kind of really make a judgment on him, even though I just have. I didn't think you're going to oust one of them and be your centre half for the season, but early days.
I must say, I don't know if I'm, like Christian says, maybe I'm reading too much into the fact that he just started the game. You know, I think we would all have liked him to start, but the fact that he just came straight in makes me feel that he is actually going to be one of the first choice. I mean, I think the guy comes with a lot of, I think, potential. I think he's obviously maybe failed to reach that potential at Tottenham, and he's came here, and maybe this is the chance. A bit like, you know, Joe Hart is at a completely different stage of his career, but his career was floundering at Tottenham, and he's came in, he's going to be loved, he's going to get that shoulder, you know, the arm around the shoulder, and hopefully he can go on and have a career with us. I think we have option to buy. Aye, I think we've got an option to buy on him. I don't know, has it been said what that is, the price? Has there been any rumour? No,
I read 1.7 million. But that seems a bit of an oddly specific figure, and I might just have made it up.
And quite low, but we'll take him for that. But aye, it'll be interesting to see, as Christian says, where he starts the European game. Let's talk about the front three, really. Jota made his debut. Ayeti up front, who bagged two goals to get our full complement of three. And Abada on the right, of course. Who wants to start us off on young Jota? Anyone? Don't rush. He's a good looking boy.
I thought it was a good debut.
He's going to frustrate the tits off, as well, isn't he, Alan?
It's wingers, isn't it? That's what wingers do. That's exactly the game. James Forrest's, 11 years into his Celtic career, and half the fan base still can't decide whether they like him or whether they don't. So.
Christian sold him 4 years ago.
I think he was old enough to drive when Christian was saying he was too old to make it. I think it was a good debut. He's going to be an enjoyable. I think he's going to be enjoyable to watch. But what I liked is he did exactly what he needs to do. He looks to come inside, let the left back come round him, and then come inside, drop the ball off, and ask for it back. You know, he's shooting. He looked quite tame in his shooting. He was kind of maybe holding a bit back. But I think for a young boy, he's going to improve. I thought it was a good debut. I really do. I think I've seen enough to think that he's probably... I mean, he's got zero competition really on that left-hand side, let's be honest. It's either James Forrest out there playing on the opposite side, or Adam Montgomery. I know that you guys obviously talked about Garamoko and Mikey Johnson, but Louis, I'm like you. I don't think you can rely on either of them this season for a first-team player, and anything you do gets a bonus. So, you know, I think he looks good. But he's raw. That's what you get. That's the reason he's at Celtic. You know, if he was cutting inside and banging in the top corner already, he wouldn't be here. He would be still with Benfica. So I've seen enough to be encouraged by it, certainly.
One thing that was doing my nut in about him, Slimani, was like he was hitting the ball. Alan, you'll know this because you've played a bit much more than the rest of us. He was like, you know, when you hit the ball right and it doesn't go too high, it kind of stays maybe about shoulder height, but you're trying to put extra spin on it. He kept doing that when he was trying to cross the ball, and I'm like, it was like trying to like, I don't know, just try and get extra spin on the ball rather than really hitting it with force and hitting it with any real height. And he'd done that a couple of times in the first half. And I'm like, man, I don't know if he's trying to be too fucking cute with us or something, but there was a couple of times he'd done it and it just hit off of the nearest defender and went away. And it just, as soon as that happened, I thought, this guy's just going to frustrate the tits off you. But some man, he goes into the corner, does some mental thing. I mean, I couldn't even see where his legs went. They went high. I don't know where they went. Fucking different directions. It was like Paddy Roberts, but better, obviously. What do you think?
It was like Paddy Roberts, but unlike Paddy, Jota has no end product from what I seen on Saturday, which is, to quote the parlance of the stat crew, it's a very small sample, Louis. And the fact is, we better get used to him there because I agree, he's got very little competition, but I can see him tying players in knots and, you know, the crowd groaning again as it sails out for a shy on the other side of the pitch. I think he's here because there's facets of his game that are far short of his dribbling ability. And I will eat humble pie and hope I eat humble pie. And I know it's, you know, this is me going off on a narrative after one game, but that it just, you know, when he got himself into a good position, his delivery looked really, really poor at times. And I just thought, that's maybe what your major flaw here is, you know. And then he certainly, you know, I thought he looked lively in the first half, but then he drifted. And, you know, you can put that down to a winger. But, you know, first impressions, I was just kind of like, I can see me not liking you very soon, Jota. But we'll wait and see.
In terms of the dribbles, Louis, 7 dribbles, which is high, but only one succeeded. So, I'm not at the stage yet where I'm annoyed at any sort of trickery, but I am probably at this dire stage where unless you can be effective with it, I'm going to get frustrated, as Armani says now. Once we had we did some initial analysis on him, Aaron and Stephen, and from what I saw today as well, we've kind of labeled him maybe a bit, you know, obvious, but almost like an opposite Abada, because as Samrani says, whereas Abada is like all end product. He pops up in the right positions in the final third. He gets into the box. He got really good crosses, but you know his build up play can be very frustrating. Whereas Jota is kind of sailing up the opposite of that, where he's kind of does have, I'll mention quite rightly, you know, the ability to get on the ball, progress it up, but the complete lack of end product and some of his choices in shooting, where he shoots from and his crossing. You've got two guys there. If you put them together, you have, you know, probably Paddy Roberts, am I right? But, you know, they have different qualities and they have different things I think I will get frustrated at, but they have things I'll get excited about as well. So I think essentially, you know, there's not many wingers unless MJ gets fit, stays fit. So it's essentially up to Ange to mold that and kind of pull out the good bits from them and have that work within the system.
Listen, we've milked the teat of this 3-0 victory over Ross County as much as we can. We've got everything we're going to get out of it. Before we move on to the Betis game this week, Christian, XP, am I right? I don't know if I said that, if that was the right thing or I made a faux pas there, but the XP table, what is that? What am I talking about? And what does it tell us?
XP you can find on the latest edition of Kerrydale Fail Twitter account, because some stats hungry Bears picked out. But expected points is essentially something we put out on at Cynic Analysis. It's Stephen Russell's model, and essentially what it is, it's a way of assigning points in a game based on the quality of chances created and conceded. You know, we're far past giving points because of goals. You know, here we essentially, what Stephen does, he takes the quality of each single chance in that game and he simulates that game 100,000 times. You know, so you can make an obvious joke about Callum McGregor playing all of them in there somewhere. For example, Celtic lose to Hearts, but for the quality of each chance for and against, if you play that game 100,000 times, Celtic will win 38%, they will draw 26%. And it, essentially, on average from those 100,000 games, Celtic would get 1.7 points. So that's it. So instead of, it's trying to kind of tease out what would the league table look like if you only went on performances. And by performances, we mean what kind of chances did you concede? What kind of chances did you create? And on that expected points table, I think you'll be delighted to hear that Celtic is top of the table.
And well, we always be at the top of the table because we're making the fucking table, though.
Well, look, I can add a couple of things in to make sure Rangers never go on the table. But essentially what it says that Celtic, quote-unquote, should have had 11 points so far. So that's essentially a draw against Hearts and Rangers, which, if you actually watch the game, kind of, you know, passes the eye test, as we call it in stats circles.
Can I put XP into room 101, lock the door, and set it on fire, and never ever hear about it again?
So Marnie, next episode of Lost in the House Space, XT, expected threat. So,
okay. See, that's fine, right? But see, an alternative league table is just a recipe for a ready. I'm putting myself.
So, Manny, we're at the top. It. Try and enjoy yourself.
Okay. All right. Here we go. XP in a row.
We don't actually want a table to be based on that. It's just a way of seeing, okay, what's the overall performances so far? Who's actually doing best in terms of the performances rather than just the results?
I know, but I'm already fast forwarding, Christian, to you know, December when we've dropped a few more points and somebody goes, anyway, actually, you know, don't worry about that.
Tell you what, Superman, if Celtic is top of the table of the expected points in December, I will go on record now to say they will be right up there in terms of the actual league table as well, because that is what they're showing. What it gives you, you know, a sense of what is most likely to happen in the next few games, because performances are always more sustainable than results. So there we
say. Well, welcome on, everything. this week we're in Europe. On Thursday, we're away to Real Betis. European football this year, obviously, we've been on a wee bit of a roller coaster already, just trying to qualify for a competition. We're in the Europa League now. Obviously, we play Betis on Thursday. We're in a group with them, Leverkusen and Ferencváros. So, Manny, what are yours? You know, now we're at the time of actually getting underway in the group. What is your expectations overall for the Europa League and also for this week's tie?
Overall, I think I've said this before, the minimum I would want or even expect is full points against Ferencváros, and I'm not saying beating them away will be simple, but I think that that's what we should expect. And then I would hope to beat Leverkusen or Betis as well at home. I'm not really sure what to expect. I mean, see the Alkmaar performance, and it seems an age ago. It really seems such a long time ago, but it wasn't too far ago. And I think we handled ourselves very well overall, given where we were as a squad, given where the team were in terms of having played together, and given that we gave two goals to them in Alkmaar so, you know, catastrophically. I think, you know, we've showed a bit of European pedigree already this season against a team who aren't too bad. So I'm going in with, I wouldn't say high hopes, but I'm going in, and I wouldn't even say quietly confidently. I would go in saying I'm fairly hopeful. There we go, and that's two words I've strung together. That sounds okay. That we can acquit ourselves very well. On Thursday, I really don't know what to expect. I haven't seen enough of Betis to to kind of get an understanding of them as a team. I think it was Alan had said in one of the WhatsApps, they're a team of nearly superstars, you know, guys who at one point were highly rated and then never quite made it. You know, there's every chance these guys will, you know, click for one final swan song against us, you know, away home in Europe. But at the same time, I'm thinking we've already showed what we're capable of. The intensity and all that has to and will come up from what it was at the weekend. I'm glad he took McGregor off for a wee bit early against Ross County. He clearly had an eye in that game going forward. So I'm unsure of what they're like as a side, but I'm hopeful that we can give a good showing of ourselves, because these games are important to see where we are as a team, because you're not really going to tell that for a lot of the home games. You're going to get a better understanding of where we are levels-wise in the Europa League. So I'm looking forward to Thursday. I don't really know what to expect, if I'm being honest, but, you know, European football's where we should be, so bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to myself. I mean, I get it. I totally agree with you in terms of I don't really know what to expect by Betis. And as you say, there's some kind of big names in there, you know, the likes of Rodri, Bellerin, Bartra, that's the boy that was at Barca, wasn't it, centre-half? Yeah. Moreno, Tello, Fekir is obviously probably their kind of star player. Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of quality in there. I guess it's just what we can do. We played the Rennes game, remember? Was the Rennes game the first game that we played away and we got the draw? And that really set it up in terms of, I think we were all pretty impressed by that. I don't think we expected the first away game to go to Rennes, who were, you know, build up to be a really good French side. We went there and we played very well at the time, and we had a plan, which, you know, was a bit of a rarity at that time. But I would like to see something like that. You know, so I'd like to have hope for the rest of the group after this. I don't want to go away and be cuffed and, you know, look like we are a fish out of water. Basically, Alan, yourself, what are you? I mean, have you got any thoughts on Betis? I don't know if yourself or Christian have maybe looked ahead for other podcasts, but what do you expect from them, and how do you think we'll approach it?
I haven't watched Betis in advance of the game, but I kind of wanted to build on what you said there. I think that it's important that we're really competitive in this game. And I don't think it's, I don't want to say acceptable, because that's not how football works. I don't think it would be good enough for us to go there and get cuffed. There's one team in this group that I think we can accept losing away to comfortably, and that's Leverkusen. And then the home game against them is going to be really difficult as well, because that is a really good side. Betis, though, away is going to be a hard game, but I think it's important that we go there and be competitive in this game. And I think the really interesting thing, and I think it's the first, probably the first real one to look at to see what Ange's going to do in terms of that midfield. Because I think if Ange goes there with Cal Mac, Tom Rodrick and David Turnbull, and we can't control the ball, then it will be a huge, huge learning curve. And I know that's not what anybody wants to see. So I think it will be very interesting to see if he goes with, you know, a James McArthur or Milo Soro. Because this is going to be a game that's going to be difficult. We're away from home. You know, they are a good side. They've got a lot of quality, and they've got a lot of quality inside the park, in the middle of the park. And I just don't know if we can go there, and especially with the front three we're going to have as well. You know, it's try and look at the whole, you know, the team. It's likely going to be Ayeti as well, Jota and Abada. I know James Forrest's a bit closer, but he's not going to play 90 minutes. You know, you've got a really inexperienced front three, and I just can't see it going Cal Mac, Rodrick and Turnbull, because we did it against Alkmaar. And we had to abandon it. We did it against Rangers, and it worked, you know, to a certain extent. But then when we lose control, or we don't have it defensively, it's not good enough. And you can't have a team of that quality running at your back four. You know, you really can't. It'll be too difficult. So I think expectations-wise, we need to go there and expect to be competitive in this game. Whether we win it, whether we draw, you know, potentially lose. But this isn't a game where I think if we come away and we've lost handsomely, you know, handsomely is probably the entirely wrong term there. But if we lose quite comfortably, that's not good enough. You know, we do want to be competitive in the group. And the only way you do that is by not giving away easy goals, not making it easy for teams. And I think this is the first real test of what we're going to do. And I think that midfield three, you know, team selection come Thursday night, that midfield three is going to be really, really indicative of where he thinks he is. And again, I said it before the game at the weekend, if James McCarthy's not involved from the start, then I'm quite worried about what the plan is there. I really would be, because I would then start to question why he was brought in, because he can't be that far away from fitness. We're in the thick of the season now, and if you don't involve that player in these games or in these type of games, then it's going to be a long season for the three guys that have kind of been in there so far.
Thursday's one of the games that you immediately comes to mind that you would hope and expect James McCarthy to be playing, because I'll be perfectly frank, you can only get away with playing Turnbull and Rogic against fairly mediocre opposition. It's not something that we can do when we step up in levels. Now, McCarthy, that you immediately think of him in games at Ibrox, European games at home, certainly away from home, where you're thinking that he's going to be able to contribute. So I wouldn't quite go as far as Alan in terms of saying if he's not playing on Thursday, I would start to question it. But if he doesn't start to play in these games going forward, then I would follow suit. Right now, in terms of his fitness, I don't know. Even he was released by Palace and stupidly we signed him late because we could have had him earlier in the window and maybe got him up to speed. So we just don't know what fitness overall he's got in his legs. I thought he looked quite good when he came on against Ross County, bear in mind it's Ross County. You know, he had some really nice passes, got himself involved, got forward on a few occasions. For the third goal, obviously, it was his header off the bar. I expect to see him in the park on Thursday. And I would concur that these are the sort of games that we would buy him for him to play in. Notwithstanding, I'm not 100% sure in his fitness, but you go in with Turnbull and Rogic on Thursday, it could be a long night.
Just very quickly on top of that as well, the other thing that this does is it means that Callum McGregor is going to be continually switching between 6 and 8, depending on the level of opposition. Last year and previous years, I think I would be okay with that. So even if it's your club captain, he has got to be the first name in a team sheet and you play him in his best position. Now, you could make an argument that that's 6, you could make an argument that it's 8, but I don't like the idea that depending who we play against, Callum McGregor gets switched between the two. Because as your club captain, as arguably your best player, you've got to say where are you best and then fit other guys around them. We've tried to do this before and get Callum McGregor to do his job in different areas because he is an intelligent football player. He's very, very good. But my club captain, our best player, Ange needs to decide where he thinks he's best and stick with that. And then the other positions, just work him around. And that number 6 position has proven to be a bit of an issue. Hopefully that's because of injuries, selection, but you know, I'm similar to Samani. I think that, you know, playing the three that we have so far, and they have done a job, and Tom Rogic's, you know, resurrecting his career, and he's going to play a big part this season with the looks of it, but in games like this, and similar games, I'm not convinced. I'm really not convinced.
I think for me, you know, those discussions around, do you need to play McCarthy in these games? Do you need to play McGregor in his best role? All comes back to me about the system and the way Ange sets up. Now, yesterday, we recorded a team talk, which is essentially a scouting report we do for the European games and the big domestic games. And Stephen Russell sits down and watches Betis. But we had a long discussion essentially around McCarthy as well. So, because Postecoglou has always said this thing that even if tomorrow is the most important game of your career, that's when your true philosophy comes out, and you should still play the philosophy and the attacking and the system that you believe is best. And for Ange Postecoglou, what we know that is he keeps doing the same thing, you know, a high press, he wants to play out from the back. So my thing with McCarthy is I don't think he's a great natural fit for a team that wants to be high up and press high. And if you have him in the system, you probably need to sit back a little bit more. And then, so he doesn't have that much space behind him. And at that point, so you kind of come to then a decision, okay, if you play McCarthy, for me, you kind of have to tweak the system a little bit. I don't know if Ange is going to do that. And the kind of the same with McGregor as well. I think Ange will play McGregor where he fits the system best. And right now, we know he wants a bit more of a ball playing number six. And so I think this is a really interesting game for all of those kind of discussions about McCarthy, about where you put McGregor, but also if Ange will keep playing against Betis away like he wants to play against Dundee at home. So there's a lot of interesting things we're going to be seeing that. And I think we're actually going to get some of those answers we've been talking about tactically, McCarthy and also McGregor. We'll see on Thursday.
My thing would be just, and it maybe kind of does lead on a wee bit where I imagine we will get to, but if you're not going to involve James McCarthy in some of these games, and I know that we're maybe getting ahead of ourselves because he did miss training time. As somebody said, he was released a long time ago, so he's getting up to speed. But if Ange Postecoglou doesn't feel that James McCarthy fits his system, then it does really, really beg the question of why he was brought in. And with Ange, we can't have our cake and eat it and say that he's too strong a character, he won't have players foisted upon him, but then say that this player doesn't fit his system. Something, it's either one or the other. It's not, you can't say that he's a very strong character, but also James McCarthy doesn't fit his system, because if he doesn't, quite simply, he should not have been brought in. And I know I'm getting ahead, because it is early, but I do think, you know, September, October, and I've said that, I think I said this a couple of weeks back, 3 points in September is the exact same as 3 points in April. So I know we're trying to get somewhere and we're trying to build, but you've got to try and start thinking now what you want to do throughout the rest of the season.
But very quickly, sorry, Simon, I think the point is, Alan, is also, I think you've raised the question, and we might come in at the end of this podcast as well, is it does happen that teams bring in players that don't fit the manager's system. And as you say, I think that's an interesting side aspect of the whole McCarthy discussion, debate.
I think, though, what we're doing is we're taking the archetype of Ange and what he does. And, you know, we're basing a lot of what he has done on what he's done before and what he said, right? Obviously, that makes sense that you do that, right? But he is also operating at a higher level than he's ever operated at before. Now, we are making assumptions based on what he says and our own preconceptions about guys like James McCarthy and Joe Hart. We've no idea if Ange wants them or not. You know, you can make the supposition that Celtic signed James McCarthy because he's a boyhood Celtic fan and has always wanted to play for the club. You can make the supposition that we signed Joe Hart because he was a big name and he was available and we've had high-profile mistakes at the back. I thought it was telling what Hart said in that interview with Micah Richards in the Daily Mail in terms of what Ange said to him. Now, it could be true that basically they said to him, you're getting Joe Hart, and Ange told him what he wanted to hear. But at the same time, if he's the guy that he is, I don't think he would have done that. And he told him he didn't need to do any sort of due diligence on him. So I suppose the point I'm making here is we don't know. And Christian's right to say we might get some of those answers going forward. But McCarthy was, and I think still can be, an exceptional football player. One of the biggest thing, the biggest issue, and I've said it consistently and I'll continue to say it, is the only concern that we've got is his ability to stay fit, because if he's had hamstring injuries and he had the bad leg break. But if he can get over them, he's not particularly old. He's only 30. If he can get over them, I think that he can play a massive role in this team. And I think his experience in there would be hugely important for McGregor. But there are unanswered questions about him right now. And I think we do need to see what happens going forward. But I'm still confident he can be a big player for us.
Hello, you're listening to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, John Smith. You've probably not heard from me in a while. So Manny, of course, you're going to have to back him because you've dealt all your cards on McCarthy. So I can't wait for him to go fucking tits up just for you. We were going to go through.
Wait a minute.
No. I insist. We've not got time.
John Smith's a lot like a former host of this podcast who would rather Celtic lost to prove a point over me. I think that sums it up. Waiting list, Louis McCaffrey's name was. But anyway, on you go, John. Go on.
I've told everyone. I'm a bitter man. We were going to go through the starting 11, but we've not got fucking time now after that monologue for everybody. So if you could keep it brief and just give me a scoreline prediction, Christian.
I wish you hadn't come for me first, because I think Celtic might lose on Thursday. I think Celtic might lose 2-0 on Thursday.
2-0. Salmani?
One each. McCarthy for Celtic.
Staunch. Alan?
3-2 win. Barnstormer.
That'd be nice. I'm going to go 2-1. Fuck it. Why not? Let's be confident. Tam with both and he plays 90 minutes. Okay, so let's move on to Don McKay. You know, the news coming out, I think there was rumours maybe in the day or two leading up to when the news actually broke that possibly Don McKay was going to be leaving. I think certainly myself, I was, no way, can't be. Don McKay left his role as CEO after 72 days in charge. He had a kind of extensive handing over period with Peter Lowell before the summer, and he lasts 72 days before he leaves in a bit of mystery. He said it was for personal reasons at the time in the statement, a statement that was so short and shitty on him. I thought, personally reading it, I thought they have said the absolute minimum here. There's clearly something going on. It's just left us in a fucking state. I think, I personally, I listened to the Biscuit Tin today with the guys, and I thought, you know, if you haven't listened to it, definitely listen to it. It was really interesting discussion about things. But really, you know, their issue was, like us all, we're all speculating. We don't know what's happened behind the scenes, and we've probably all got our own kind of educated guesses, shall we say, of what's went on. But the bare facts of it are that we replaced a CEO who was here for 15 years and replaced him with a guy from the rugby. Now, we've all kind of taken the piss out of him and you know, I called him Dom the Dick, and we've talked about pints of piss and things like that. But the, you know, I think we all had high hopes because he was coming out at least with the sound bites that we wanted to hear, which we haven't heard in a long time. Things like, you know, words like modernization and wanting to look at some of the other clubs around Europe, Sevilla and Brentford, and clubs that are seen as being progressive clubs that have a strategy, that are modern in their thinking, and that we were going to emulate what they do. And personally speaking, my hopes are really high for where we were going, because I thought Dom was telling me everything I wanted to hear, and I thought it was going to be great, and now he's gone. And personally for me, it feels like it's embarrassing for one, and two, what the fuck are we going to do? Because this old guard Tory board are basically shutting down shop and just keeping their friends close, and they're going to double down and, you know, do whatever the fuck they want. And we're not going to get anywhere near the club that we wanted to be. That's my initial reaction to it. Christian, how did you feel when you saw the news?
Yeah, it left me despondent as well, Louis, because I think even I thought that would be beyond Celtic at this point. And it just adds to everything over the last 18 months. And as you say, that there was that, I wasn't fully convinced by McKay. He spoke a really good game, but I think he was at the point now after this window where he said the modernization is going to start, and the proof would have been in the pudding. And as you say, there's so many things we don't know, but there is a few things we do know. We do know that the statement that came out said personal reasons, and the club left itself a little bit of wriggle room there. So it seems a bit odd, but you also don't want to speculate whether there were some serious personal issues there. But pretty much straight away, you know, the club started briefing to fan media, and essentially the briefing was personal reasons, it's cold for us to leave. They were briefing to their press contacts, and, you know, people like Alice McConnell, Stephen McGowan, both former employees of the club, trusted sources. I think McConnell said something in her article saying, you know, McKay made seemed to be an imperfect fit. The impression he'd made in the opening months wasn't great, and the feeling within the club that this part is better for all parties that he left now. So even though with that statement, everything we know the club has been briefing points to the club hierarchy not being pleased with Don McKay, and he was asked to leave. So then it comes to a point who do you believe? You know, Kieran and Devlin said on agenda on Monday, you know, there's sources around the club, not in the club, but around McKay, that there's his side is, whether he'll ever come out and say this, but it seems like there's the other side of this from the clubs, is that the club was not ready to embrace the changes McKay wanted to do. As you say, we don't know who's telling the whole truth there, or if there's shades of that, but there will be an element of who do you believe? And the amount of people, fan accounts, that seems to be willing to believe this board after all they've done over the last 18 months, I found absolutely staggering. And I, you know, for me, I know who I believe the most after those two parties right now about what happened.
I don't, so many, you know, Christian said that he was despondent. Honest to God, right? And I know this is sad because it's a fucking CEO leaving a company or a PLC and all that. I was really fucking down about it. Like, I dreamt about it that night. Like, I was fucking overthinking this. Like, fuck, because I think I'd built up so much hope in my head that we were going to become the club that I thought we should be. Alan, you might get a joke in here. Go.
Can we get some details of the dream? That's all I want to know.
You know,
specifics, please.
I woke up a bit of a mess, but I genuinely thought that we were going to go somewhere, that, you know, we were going to modernise, we were going to have a director of football come in and all that sort of thing. And it sucked the life out of me. I thought, we are fucked again, aren't we? Like, is that how you see it, Samani, or do you think maybe the board are... Is this a plan? Are they going to give us what we want?
Well, there's a few things, right? One, you said this Tory board. I would assume Dom McKay is a Tory as well, and I think anybody we get in at that place will be a Tory. So, unfortunately, it's going to be a Tory appointment to a Tory board, right? Anyway, are we fucked? We're fucked in the essence of what we would like Celtic to become in terms of a more forward-thinking, progressive club. Does this mean that we're not going to be competitive in Scotland and things like that? No, because it doesn't really work that way. And that's enough for some people, but maybe not most of the people in this podcast. The bottom line for me is, and in fact, I will keep this fairly brief, is either way, it's the board's fault. See, if he was crap, why did they appoint him? And see, if they weren't ready to embrace his change, you know, well, that's on the board again. So the bottom line is, I can't see any other way than the board are completely at fault for this, and they need going. We need to get rid of them.
How do we get rid of, like, see that banker bastard? How do we get him to fuck?
I don't know.
Is there any way that happens?
I went up to Celtic Park and got soaked. I thought that was it. I thought that day we would go up and that would be, they would walk. I don't know. I've said this before. There has to be a concerted effort, and we need to have an idea of what we want. It can't just be get out. There needs to be an idea and a vision, and I know that there's some organisations trying to do that, but I think the broader support needs to be behind that, and that might take time, you know. So, you know, things like the Celtic Trust or whatever might blossom and come into something else. Right now, I don't think that they've got that grassroots support that they need, but it needs to be something like that, because there has to be an idea of what you want. It can't just be, we don't like what you are, because the easiest thing in the world would be that we'll take one of them out and put another one in like they might do right now. So that's going to take time, but we need to be consistent in asking for it. And it's about, you know, long-term change. I'll leave it there.
Alan, do you think there's going to be a bit of a vacuum now? Because obviously if we would have had hopes that over the last few months that Dom McKay would have been putting things together to move us in a certain direction. The worry is that now there's a bit of a vacuum. All of that is gone. We're starting from scratch again, and we're maybe not going to be building the same structure that we maybe had hoped previously. Is that what you think?
Yeah, I think that a lot. There was a lot of hope put on Dom McKay purely because he was an outsider. That was why it was exciting. He was a different face. He was not, even though he was, I mean, I remember reading months, even almost up to probably a year before his appointment, that he was going to be the chosen one, because I didn't remember his name, but I knew everybody spoke about him as the guy from Scottish Rugby, and that was it. And that was why we were excited, because we thought, right, he's going to come in, fresh set of eyes. There are now no fresh eyes there. I do find the narrative quite convenient, and I'm not going to talk too long about it because I mean, it's a chief executive. We're here to talk about football. Who really cares about a chief executive? But it's extremely convenient that it's the outsider coming in that's actually one that, who doesn't impress, you know, not the non-executive directors that have been there for many, many years. It's actually, you know, it so happens that the new guy coming in with fresh ideas has nothing to offer, and we've been so despondent with his performance in the initial 3 months, including in the transfer market, which was the most laughable element of it. I think the idea that Don McKay wasn't quick enough doing transfers, that's a new phenomenon to Celtic, of course. That's something that we've never experienced before. That's the reason he didn't impress. It's frustrating, but I think the point that you made there, Louis, is really important. You know, and Samani talked about it. I was there in the rain as well. I was disappointed. I thought the crowd had turned up that day, and I know it was raining, and I know there was limited crowd. I didn't have a ticket, but I still went down. I went down because I thought this could be something. Celtic shared, the Celtic Trust, and that encompasses a lot of different fan groups. And we, as a fan base, need to come up with something better than, you know, there are a lot of shareholders who don't have voting rights. You know, that isn't exciting enough. I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I do not have a better idea. But we need to come up with something more attractive that will make people come down to Celtic Park when it's raining, when it's drizzling, when it's cold. Because at the moment, we are in a worse position than we were 12 months ago in terms of the board and the chief executive. And that's quite a scary prospect. We have no new thinking. We have no outside voices. We actually have less experience than we had 12 months ago. And that's quite worrying. And I do think, as Samani said, that we personally, I do not care who, but somebody's got to put their hands up and say, we appointed Don McKay. It can't be just a case of, ah, it's a pity we appointed the wrong guy. It's embarrassing. It would no doubt be expensive. And we shouldn't be making these appointments in-house. We really shouldn't. We've heard a lot about manager recruitment, chief executive recruitment, how we're going out to these outside firms. It always seems to be there. Familiar, it always seems to be, again, the outsider that's the odd one out and who didn't impress. But I'm not particularly impressed with the chief executive. I'm not particularly impressed with the non-executive directors, and I think the club has no fresh thinking whatsoever. So that's got to be rectified. And the only people that can really force that change are fans, and we've got to come up with something a wee bit better that's going to engage people.
I think
the problem really is that there's a large section of the fan base that doesn't care, and they think that, I mean, see if we run Rangers close this season, and you know, they'll look at it based on how we do in the league as opposed to what we could do and the potential and stuff like that. There are some people that they just want to turn up, watch Celtic play and see how well they do in the league, and until you can engage that part of the fan base, that's really difficult. But I do agree that maybe the message and or whatever needs to change or improve. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there because it needs to engage far more people.
And look, the point about the fans, and Samrani is absolutely right, that first you have to, you know, come up with an alternative. I touched upon it earlier, but it's even when you have big fan media accounts coming in and airing the possibility that, you know, one of the reasons, as Alan said, McKay didn't have to go was because he wasn't doing the transfers well enough. And I mean, I don't really see how you can get to a point where you're willing to give this board of all those things, any sort of benefit of the account. I think it's absolutely crucial. Even though you get a little bit of inside information and briefing from the club, you have to be critical. You know, this is a board. And as you say, we're done my case. My guy's face just probably didn't fit. And when we talk about the board, what we essentially are saying is Dermot Desmond, because what Dermot wants, Dermot gets. And that board is just a way of, you know, propping him up. You know, they're not never going to go again against Dermot Desmond. I think from what I've heard, like the different sources around the club as well, the level of involvement, daily involvement Desmond wants and has in football operations, especially around transfers and everything, is, I find quite shocking. And I think I find it difficult to see how now we've had this McKay experiment, as the guy says, somebody new, somebody with fresh eyes, don't know what's happened exactly.
but I am in no mood to give any sort of benefit of the doubt to the board, especially Dermot Desmond. I think it shows that while he's there and while he wants to have that sort of control, Celtic is going to be left on the level they are now. So Samani says, it's not going to be catastrophic. It's not going to be another Sevco, but it's not. You're going to tread in the same path and you're going to stay at the same level. So this all comes back to me, Dermot Desmond. If you ask me how to get him out, I have no idea. But I think he is the big blocker for this club.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you, but I just want to say, if I was a billionaire owner of Celtic, I'd be fucking calling the shots, or not.
You would do a better job.
Probably. Right, we're going to have one question from the Discord. The Discord, you know, it's people go and talk about the cynic and that and Celtic, so it's lovely. We've had a few questions tonight. Usually we get through a lot more, but, you know, I think, to be honest with you, the producer's falling asleep. He usually tells us to get the fuck off by now. But I'm going to ask you one question. I want an answer from everybody before we finish. Alan has come up with a cracking question. He says, you are guaranteed to take 4 points from Thursday and Sunday. Sunday, we're playing Livingston away. Myself and Sir Manny are on the reaction. Yes. Is Alan on it too?
No, I was just excited about the prospect of you two on the reaction. I look forward to it.
That's lovely. You were nodding there. I thought you were on it. I don't know who else is. But anyway, you're guaranteed to take 4 points from Thursday and Sunday. Which game do you want the 3 points from?
Sunday.
Christian. Well, for fuck's sake. I was going to come to Christian first, but you know what? What do you want? Sunday?
Sunday.
Aye, because you're all about the league.
It can't all be about domestic dominance.
When they want the 3 points, Sunday. Christian?
It's Sunday, Louis. Sunday. Because I'm a little bit worried about the state of the first team at the moment with so many injuries with Kyogo out. So I just want to get to the next international break with all the points. And a draw away, I bet this would be a really good result. So yeah, Sunday all the way.
I'm not obsessed with just beating Rangers, so I want to take 3 points against Betis away. Alan, yourself?
I'd be delighted with a point on Thursday, so and 3 points on Sunday would be good. That's an easy one, sorry mate. 3 points Sunday. We've all had a heavy Saturday night. It's an early kickoff. We don't want a Sunday ruined. It's a Lord's Day. Nah, so it's got to be 3 points on Sunday, mate. That's a no-brainer.
You've really just been outed as a wee diddy here, haven't you? You tried to come at me and it's just backfired.
It's all right. Lou McCaffrey will be back hosting next week. Don't you worry about that. Listen, this has been the Cynic Weekly. It's been a pleasure as always. Christian Wolf, good to have you back, my man.
Great to be back. I can't believe you didn't ask me about Christopher Ayer.
I know.
If you think I had a monologue about Dermot Desmond, you should have seen my monologue there. So
I saw his team get beat at the weekend.
Another time. Another
delightful. Alan Edgar.
Thanks very much for having me in the pod of our people.
Pod of our people. That's what I was going to come up with at the start, but you know, I thought I'd leave it to the end because they'll not be listening to this.
You might have to cut that now, you know.
Uncertain times is as well, you know.
Absolutely. Christopher Somani, I'm sorry for, you know, the digs and that. I do love you, really.
I know, and I love you too. It's great being on the podcast of the proletariat. Thank you.
I still can't say that word. This has been the Cynic Weekly, and we will speak to you down the road.